I now call your attention to Revelation 14, 19, and 20. Revelation 14, 19, and 20. And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trodden without the city, and blood came out of the winepress, even unto the horse bridles, by the space of 1,600 furlongs. This angel thrust his sickle into the earth. We are advised in verse 20 as to where the sickle makes its earthly penetration. Somewhere in Israel, outside the city of Jerusalem. The word used for winepress is lanos, which means a trough dug in the earth, a ditch or canal, or anything shaped like a tub. The winepress with which John was familiar, that is, all the winepresses with which John was familiar, were rectangular in shape and made of or dug out of rock. Blood-red wine was made from grapes. The ripe clusters were carried in baskets to the press and thrown into it. The press consisted of a shallow trough built above ground or excavated in the rock, and through holes in the bottom connecting with a lower vat, the blood-red fluid produced by treading flowed freely into its receptacle. John looked down upon the earth and beheld outside the city of Jerusalem the largest wine press ever seen by human eyes. He saw a great trough, lanos, in the earth, 1,600 furlongs, or 185 miles long. The opening of the earth made by the sickle had caused blood to come out of the wine presses to a depth of about 5 feet, that is, unto the horse bridles. The Greek word used for blood is hama, which can mean real blood, or any object taking on a blood-red color, or any flowing liquid that has a blood-red hue. The Hebrew word for blood is also often used figuratively to describe a blood-red liquid other than blood itself, as stated in Genesis 49:11. Genesis 49:11. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt unto the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. We know that grapes do not have real blood. They merely have a blood-red fluid inside them. At least this Hebrew variety did. The moon will not turn to real blood in the Great Tribulation period, but will take on a blood-red hue, as described by the word hama in Revelation 6:12. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and, lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. The moon will not turn into real blood, but rather will take on a blood-red color. Later on, I will try to carefully put together and fully exposit on Revelation 14, 19, and 20. That's the verse of Scripture that I just read, Revelation 14, 19, and 20. And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trodden without the city, and blood came out of the winepress, even into the horse bridles, by the space of 1,600 furlongs. I will be expositing on that in just a few moments, but I'd like to take some time to describe the most terrifying creation of God known to man before I do, a basalt floodplain, a basalt floodplain. In the distant geological past, 6 major rippings in the crust of the earth have produced 6 great basaltic floodplains. These 6 great cleavages in the crust of the earth occurred in zones along the dashed black lines of Figure 3. These 6 great cleavages in the crust of the earth occurred in zones along the dashed black lines of Figure 3. They represent magmatic extrusions associated with the initial phases of continental drifting. Dr. W. Kenneth Hamblin, in his standard geological text, The Earth's Dynamic System, states, where the rift system passes beneath a continent, the continental crust is split, and great volumes of basalt are extruded and spread out over large areas of the continent. These great floods of lava fill lowlands and depressions in the existing topography. The rift system that passes beneath the continent from the Gulf of Aqaba northward through Israel is a prime candidate for the sudden creation of a flood basalt plain. The following quoted material concerning flood basalt plains was extracted from Volcano, Volume 2 of a 1982 Time Life series that examines the workings of the planet Earth. The geological consultant for this volume is Dr. William Melson, Curator in Charge, Division of Petrology and Volcanology, Smithsonian Institute, Washington, D.C. He has studied volcanoes throughout the world, with particular attention to Central America, the Philippines, New Guinea, and most recently Mount St. Helens in the state of Washington. These are direct excerpts taken from that material, 1982 Time Life series. Page 63. Inland flood basalts, such as India's Deccan Plateau or the Columbia River Plateau in the United States, are one of the great enigmas in plate tectonics. Their magma periodically spurts to the Earth's surface through 100-mile-long swarms of fissures, flooding vast geological regions. Page 70. Flood basalts are generated atop the upper mantle. When tension opens fissures in the crust, remember that word tension. When tension opens fissures in the crust, the fluid magma spurts directly to the surface. The sheer volume of an eruption dwarfs all other volcanic activity. A week-long flow can release 360 cubic miles of lava, 10 times the volume of Washington's 14,400-foot Mount Rainier. Extremely fluid magma suddenly spurts to the surface through a line of hundreds of offset dikes, each one as much as 15 miles long and 50 feet wide. The lava from such individual fissures, about 5 cubic miles per day, is so hot and runny that it speeds down the slightest slope at nearly 10 miles an hour, creating a lava sheet as much as 100 miles wide. Page 70. Flood basalts are rare geological events, but to volcanologists they remain an abiding concern. Even though there have been no historic eruptions comparable to those before recorded human history, a standard textbook notes, sooner or later, they must recur. Why have I spent so much time discussing flood basalt plains? Because I intend to build a case that, at some point in time during the last half of the tribulation period, the great rift valley of Israel will suddenly rip open from one end to the other. For a period of time after this ripping, a vast flood basalt plain will be created along a 185-mile, at 1,600 furlongs, section of the valley. From the air, it will look like a great wine press filled with blood. Tremendous tectonic changes will completely restructure the entire valley from the Gulf of Aqaba to Lebanon. The fissures will close abruptly at the end of the tribulation period from the southern end of the Dead Sea northward to Lebanon. However, limited volcanic activity will continue south of the Dead Sea throughout the millennial reign of Christ from generation to generation, as indicated in Isaiah 34, 8 through 10. In Isaiah 34, 8 through 10, these words are written, "For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. And the streams thereof shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night nor day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever and ever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever." Now, considering John's description of the great winepress in Revelation 14, 19, and 20, in light of one of God's fantastic creations in the earth, let us compare God's linguistics with God's science. What John saw looked like a great lenos, a trough or ditch or canal, about 185 miles long. I call your attention to Figure 24, Part A. Figure 24, Part A, which is an excerpt from a 1970 diagram by Dr. Freund showing both sides of the Dead Sea Rift. The long dashed black lines that run north and south along both sides of the Dead Sea from the Gulf of Aqaba through Israel are great fissures in the crust of the earth. These fissures weave their way downward through the earth in an erratic manner to eventually make contact with great undersea lakes of magma. Part A of Figure 24 gives a picture of these fissures as though you were looking down on them from a satellite, while Part B pictures the same fissures as though you were deep within the earth looking northward to view their actual downward progression into the earth. These fissures are where they should be to comply with John's description, without the city of Jerusalem. And the word lenos certainly fits the characteristics of this great trough in the earth's crust. John sees Hama come out of the lenos to cover an area 185 miles long. I contend that John saw a blood-red liquid, Hama, called lava, spread across the great trough, lenos, of Israel. The blood-red lava came out of the lenos, the trough, to fill the Jordan River Valley to a depth of about 5 feet, the height of the horse bridles. Please note on Part A of Figure 24 the great fault line that veers off the main trough and runs northwestward toward Haifa. If you measured northward from the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba to the point of departure of this Haifa fault line, you will discover it is 185 miles. I believe this 185-mile section of the Jordan River trough is the great wine press that John saw filled with a blood-red fluid as he looked down upon the earth in his vision. Please observe Figure 25. Please observe Figure 25. God, for some time, has been bringing an unbelievable tonnage of hot, flowing rock upward into the Red Sea fault. As this liquid rock makes contact with a water-cooled Red Sea floor, it solidifies into new basaltic crust. This new crust is forcing two great tectonic plates, the Arabian and African, to move away from each other at a rapid geological rate. This particular segment of the Earth's crust is spreading apart faster than any other geological zone. Please note on Figure 25 that while the Red Sea section of the fault is spreading rapidly, the great Arab fault of Israel and Lebanon is locked tighter than a drum. Long ago, God pushed together these two great tectonic plates separated only by the Jordan Rift Valley. God's horizontal pressure fused both sides of the valley floor to the plates, like as one would push together two pieces of clay. It is this horizontal pressure that locks the fissures in place and prevents magma from spurting to the surface on both sides of the valley. This locked section of Figure 26 is held together by a certain tensional force placed there by God. In the Red Sea section of the rift, God is generating a force that is in direct opposition to his tensional force that locks the northern land section. Tensional forces are building in the Gulf of Aqaba, and soon the opposing forces will end a climactic struggle as the locked fault of Israel suddenly rips open like a great watermelon. It will be sudden, abrupt, and horrifying. God will suddenly create a 185-mile-long flood basalt plain that begins at the Gulf of Aqaba. On both sides of the Jordan Valley, fountains of blood-red liquid, now confined by pressure below the fissures of Figure 27, will suddenly shoot hundreds of feet into the air. I believe that what you see in Figure 28 is what John saw from above in Revelation 14, 19, and 20. I believe that what you see in Figure 28 is what John saw from above in Revelation 14, 19, and 20. When the angel of Revelation 14, 19, and 20 thrusts his sickle into the Jordan River Valley, it will release the tensional forces that bind it together. And man in this generation will see the fantastic power of God revealed in one of his terrifying creations, a flood basalt plain. God does not have to use man's puny creations to destroy mankind. He will destroy man with the earth. I now call your attention to Isaiah 5 and 14. Isaiah 5:14. Therefore hell hath enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure, and their glory and their multitude and their pomp, and he that rejoiceth shall descend into it. Most expositors of today's popular religious works go to great lengths to work the weaponry of modern technology into the scriptures. Ezekiel's wheel within a wheel becomes a flying saucer. John's scorpions become Russian jets, and his horses Chinese tanks. But expositors of all ages have vainly attempted to work the weaponry of their day into the scriptures, and thus far all have been wrong. Please do not misunderstand. I am certainly aware that there will be a great battle of Armageddon. I realize that a large percentage of mankind will be destroyed by his own weaponry. And also, please understand that some passages in the scripture may well refer to man's weaponry of the last days. But I am simply saying it has been greatly overplayed. The vast majority of mankind killed in the world and during the battle of Armageddon will not be by man's hand, but rather by God unleashing the natural forces of his creation. God will destroy man with the earth. Isaiah 5:14 portrays red, hot, liquid rock from hell pouring out on the surface of the earth. Hell literally enlarges itself by expanding out onto the surface of the earth as God opens the deep mouths in the crust of it, shown as dashed lines in figure 3. Therefore hell hath enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure. Hell will flow upward to the surface of the earth without measure. Today, many modernistic theologians believe that hell is a mystical spiritual place inside the earth where the souls of the departed lost are kept until their judgment at the great white throne of Revelation 20:11-15. Hell is black as night and hot as hell. These great interior lakes of liquid rock are dark as pitch and hot as hell. I believe that God has confined the souls of the dead who died in a lost condition to these undersea lakes of hell. I know that God makes a practice of confining spiritual beings to material places, one such example being found in Revelation 9:14. Revelation 9:14, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. Angels are certainly spiritual beings, and the river Euphrates is certainly a literal physical place. Hell is literal, and hell is physical. And God makes a habit of confining spiritual beings to material places. Amos 9:2 identifies the literal hell as something you must dig down to reach. Amos 9:2. Though they dig into hell, thence shall mine hand take them. Though they climb up to heaven, thence will I bring them down. Proverbs 15:24 identifies hell as being located in the earth below our feet. Proverbs 15:24. The way of life is above to the wise, that he may depart from hell beneath. Isaiah 14:9 identifies that hell is located such that it must be moved upward from beneath to meet someone coming down from the earth's surface. Isaiah 14:9. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. The earth itself is the bottomless pit that enshrouds a literal interior hell of hot liquid rock, and it is the upward extrusion of this hell upon the surface of the earth that will destroy the bulk of the Antichrist people and his army. If you still have difficulties in believing that God makes a practice of confining spiritual beings to literal physical places, then please take a look in the mirror. There you will see a spiritual being confined to a material place. I call your attention back to Part A of Figure 24. I call your attention back to Part A of Figure 24. Please note that God has very conveniently created a major fault line that runs as an offshoot from the Jordan River Valley northwestward toward Haifa. The placement of this offshoot fault is extremely interesting in regards to the Battle of Armageddon. The fault line runs directly through and under a great valley that extends from Wadi El Yabis on the Jordan to Haifa. The great valley through which it runs has many proper names, but to many Bible expositors it is popularly referred to as the Valley of Megiddo. It is the Valley of Armageddon where the hottest part of the last battle of this age will be waged. The army of the Antichrist will have overrun and conquered this valley before the city of Jerusalem is conquered. The conquest and rape of Jerusalem by the Antichrist army is described in Zechariah 14:1-3. The conquest and rape of Jerusalem by the Antichrist army is described in Zechariah 14:1-3. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. Verse 3 indicates that God will go forth and do the fighting for an Israel that has been utterly crushed by the Antichrist. It indicates that the nations which came down with the Antichrist from the north are suddenly going to be facing someone they cannot defeat: the God of Israel. At the time of the fulfillment of verse 3, the armies of the nations will be encamped in the two great valleys of Israel, the valley that runs from Haifa southeastward to the Jordan, and the entire valley of the Jordan River from Lebanon southward to the central portion of the Dead Sea. It will be a time of great rejoicing for the Antichrist and his vast horde of nations. They will have accomplished their objectives, Israel will have been defeated, and Jerusalem will have been conquered. Suddenly, without warning, God will rip open the earth's crust to expose its underground blood-red lava. The tear in the crust of the earth will extend northward from the Gulf of Aqaba for about 185 miles. The armies in this zone will be destroyed by fountains of blood-red lava that fill the valley of the Jordan to a depth of about 5 feet. The armies encamped over the fault zone, extending from Haifa to the Jordan, will suddenly experience a great shaking as God moves the earth beneath them. Great earthquakes in this zone will be followed by numerous volcanic eruptions that pop up suddenly through the crust as cinder cone mountains of hail. Ezekiel describes the events that will transpire at this great battle in the Battle of Armageddon in Ezekiel 38:15-23. Ezekiel 38:15-23. And thou shalt come from thy place out of the north parts, thou and many people with thee, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. And thou shalt come up against my people of Israel as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the latter days. And I will bring thee against my land, and the heathen may know me, when I shall be sanctified in thee, O Gog, before their eyes. O Gog, of course, being the Antichrist. Thus saith the Lord God, art thou he of whom I have spoken in old time by my servants the prophets of Israel, which prophesied in those days many years that I would bring thee against them? And it shall come to pass at the same time when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord God, that my fury shall come up in my face. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel. This is not something that is wrought by the power of man. Listen as I read these verses. They describe a ripping apart of the crustal sections of Israel in the greatest earthquake the world has ever known. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel, so that the fishes of the sea and the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the earth and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. Now there is no question there will be a battle, but the shaking of the earth and the ripping apart of the crust will cause great confusion, as verse 21 continues. And I will call for a sword against him throughout all my mountains, saith the Lord God. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. This last portion is a description of the ripping open of the valley of the Armageddon, tremendous thunderstorm cones building over the top of volcanic eruptions, hailstones that will be as large, ice hailstones as large as grapefruit. It will be a literal flowing condition of blood-red material coming down out of the sky. And I will plead against him with pestilence and with blood, and I will rain upon him, upon his bands, and upon the many people that are with him, an overflowing rain and great hailstones, fire and brimstone. Thus will I magnify myself and sanctify myself, and I will be known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am the Lord. Verse 15 reveals some locational information as to the homeland of the Antichrist when it states, And thou shalt come from thy place out of the north parts. We can now be certain that the Antichrist Gog will rise to power as the head of some country to the north of the nation of Israel. There are several countries to the north of Israel in which the Antichrist could arise, but I am persuaded he will arise out of the small country immediately north of Israel, the country of Lebanon. I protest the efforts of some commentators to take the descriptions of warfare in Ezekiel's day and literally carry them forward into our day and time. Just because God's army is riding on horses in Ezekiel's vision does not necessarily mean that the Antichrist army will do the same. Suppose God had inspired Ezekiel to write what he saw, suppose that God had inspired Ezekiel to write that he saw Russian tanks and personnel carriers bringing the great armies of the nations southward. The readers of Ezekiel's day would have laughed him to scorn. I am persuaded that God means for our generation to grasp from his description the picture of a great, mighty army, fully equipped with good transportational means and fully armed to the teeth with all the known modern weapons of warfare. Verse 16 states that the armies of Antichrist will spread across the land like a great cloud. This describes the rapid vertical development of a cumulonimbus cloud when it first quickly comes toward the observer as a rumbling thunderstorm and then gradually covers the land from horizon to horizon where he or she stands. This will be the manner in which the bands and many people of Gog will abruptly spread across Israel. But verse 16 also informs us that God has a purpose in all this as he states, I will bring thee against my land, that the heathen may know me when I shall be sanctified in thee, O Gog, before their eyes. God is going to wipe out Gog and his mighty army before the eyes of the entire Gentile world. There should be no question as to who is God after the battle of Armageddon. Verse 17 makes it clear that the prophecy of the Antichrist is not a new prophecy. God clearly proclaims that the prophets of Israel have been crying out for many years that in the last days a great man of sin would be brought against Jerusalem. That man of sin is Gog, the Antichrist of Satan, who will soon manifest himself in a country to the north of Israel, and I believe that country is Lebanon. Verse 18 proclaims that God is about to cut loose on an unbelieving world with his terrible wrath. God's creation is about to be shaken from one end to the other by geological upheavals like man has never seen before. Verse 19 proclaims the great earthquakes that will accompany the ripping open of the fault structure shown in Part A of Figure 24. It will be the greatest shaking the world has ever known in any location. The Mount of Olives will split in two. The western half of Jerusalem will be lifted up along a line from Geba to Rimmon. The city will also be divided geologically into three sections. The Jordan River Valley will be filled with blood-red lava, and many other prophesied phenomena will occur, many of which will be dealt with later on in these tapes. Would you like a detailed picture of a vast area devastated by fantastic earthquake activity? Then just simply read verse 20 for yourself. That is exactly what verse 20 describes. So that the fishes of the sea and the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the earth and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. Verse 20 indicates that the great earthquake generated in verse 19 in Israel is the initial trigger of a worldwide shaking. When God rips open the Arab fault of Israel, a chain reaction will ripple through the dashed black lines of figure 3, and all the living creatures of this earth will shake at the presence of God's power. Verse 21 describes the effect that the great worldwide geological upheaval will have upon mankind. In a word, mass confusion. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. I say this reverently. All hell will break loose. During the mass confusion, atomic weapons of war will fill the air as well as explode underground in their silos. The geological upheaval will lead to atomic chaos among the nations of men. Verse 22 paints a picture of the destruction that God will rain down upon Gog and his mighty Magog-supported army. It is a description of tremendous volcanic eruptions along the fault structure of figure 29. Figure 29. There will be a showering of countless tons of pyroclastic materials on the armies of the Antichrist. About 85% of his army will be destroyed by the earthquakes released and when the Arab fault splits, and by the tremendous fountains of blood and volcanic cones that burst forth after the split. Verse 23 confirms that God has a purpose in all this geological upheaval and destruction. It should leave no doubt as to who is God and who is Antichrist. I now call your attention to Joel 3, verses 9 through 16. Joel 3, verses 9 through 16. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be weakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full, the vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. Verses 9 through 11 describe the final gathering of the Gentile nations for the last great battle of the tribulation period. Verse 12 identifies a specific valley in Israel where God's sickle will come down the hardest in his judgment, the valley of Jehoshaphat. A few Bible expositors of today incorrectly locate this valley by identifying it as the Kidron Valley between Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives. But this identification is totally an error. The Kidron Valley was falsely identified as the Valley of Jehoshaphat by Jerome in the 4th century, more than 1,000 years after the death of Joel. The Valley of Baraka in 2 Chronicles 20:25-29 is most likely what was described by Joel as the Valley of Jehoshaphat. I believe this to be the case because about 100 years before Joel's writings, Jehoshaphat had won a great national victory over the invading heathen nations surrounding Israel, nations who sought to cut off Israel from being a nation. This great valley of 2 Chronicles 20:25-29 is located between Tekoa and the road from Bethlehem to Hebron. It is a broad, rich vale watered with copious springs, affording space for the encampment of a great army of men. Oddly enough, it just happens to be located 8 miles west of the great geological fault that goes down into the undersea lakes of magmatic hell. When the great sickle of verse 13 plunges into the earth in Israel, the Jordan Valley Press will be full and overflowing. Overflowing with vast hordes of mankind whose wickedness is great. Verse 14 outlines the great number as multitudes, multitudes. and identifies it as the time of God's final decision on the Antichrist and his armies. Verse 15 describes the effects when the volcanic smoke will have on the heavenly bodies as it rises over Israel. Just as the Antichrist will believe he has won, with his armies controlling the land from Lebanon to the Valley of Jehoshaphat, God will have his angel put in the sickle of Revelation 14, 19, 20. And the Valley of Jehoshaphat, the valley from Haifa to the Jordan, and the Jordan Valley itself will become a raging inferno. Verse 16 affirms that all of this will be wrought by God to demonstrate that he will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. And I will call your attention to Micah 1, 3, and 4. Micah 1, 3, and 4. For behold, the Lord cometh forth out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. And the mountains shall be molten under him, and the valleys shall be cleft as wax before the fire, and as the waters that are poured down a steep place. These verses figuratively picture melting topography and spreading valleys beneath the feet of the Lord. The word used here for cleft is the word beka, which is the same word used for cleave in Zechariah 14:4 to describe the formation of a very great valley through the Mount of Olives. It means to break, rend, rip up, make a breach, separate, split, cut out, break through or into, or to divide. The same God who inspired the scripture has, for a very long time, been bringing molten rock upward through a crack in the crust of southeastern Africa. And as this molten rock has cooled to form new crust, it has caused the crack to spread apart into a very great valley, a valley that is cleaving apart as wax before the fire. This great rift valley is shown in figure 25. Figure 25. The same God who is spreading apart the Red Sea floor is also slowly spreading apart southeastern Africa by the same process. Please note the great African rift valley in figure 30. At times, God works very slowly. Please note the great African rift valley in figure 30. At times, God works very slowly, as he has and is, to create this great valley. However, Peter informs us that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. Time means nothing to God and his ability to create. The same God who has formed the great African rift valley of figure 30 over a long period of time can, abruptly and without warning, create just such a valley in less than a day. This is how a valley similar to the African valley will be generated through the Mount of Olives, suddenly, without warning, in less than a day. Of particular interest in figure 30 is the location of the Afar Triangle at the juncture of three rift valleys, the Red Sea, Aden, and African crustal cracks. This juncture is what is called a triple point depression in geological jargon. These three large pieces of the Earth's crust, identified as the African, Arabian, and Somalian plates in figure 30, are slowly spreading apart from one another and, in the wake of their movement, are leaving behind a sinking depression in the crust of the Earth, a depression identified as the Afar Triangle or depression. The Afar depression has not always existed. At one time, it was merely a structural weakness in the crust of the Earth where converging intersection of faults were made at almost perpendicular angles. But a tremendous shaking and upheaval in the Earth's crust at these intersections caused the formation of a triple-point depression at their juncture. At the present time, there exists a pattern of normal faults in the Jerusalem area similar to those that led to the formation of the Afar depression. I believe that when God rips open the Arab fault through Israel, the associated shaking and upheaval in the Earth's crust will produce a new Afar depression on the eastern lee of the Mount of Olives. For want of a better name, I will refer to it as the Zechariah Triangle or Depression. The rest of the discussion, at least for the next few moments in the tape, will be directed in relation to the cleaving of the Mount of Olives. I now direct your attention to the book of Zechariah, chapter 14, verses 4 and 5. Zechariah 14, 4 and 5. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. And there shall be a very great valley. And half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. And ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azazel. Yea, ye shall flee like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. And the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with thee. The word used for cleave is pekah, which means to break, rend, rip up, make a breach, separate, split, cut out, break through or into, or to divide. A valley itself is often referred to as a cliff, Baca, such as the Baca Valley in Lebanon. The context of these verses leaves little doubt that the Lord intends to form a great cleavage valley in the midst of the Mount of Olives. It is also quite clear from the linguistics of verse 4 that it will not be merely a narrow ravine, but rather a very great valley. It will be sufficiently wide for multitudes of Israelites to flee through it. The word for midst in verse 4 is a word that, when used in this particular context, means to divide, to reach to the midst. The word midst does not have to mean dead center or exactly halfway, as the following scriptures will attest. Psalm 103, the 103rd Psalm, verse 24. I said, O my God, take me not away in the midst of my days. Thy years are throughout all generations. Jeremiah 17 and 11. As the partridge setteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool. The Bible indicates a normal lifespan of 70 years for a human. You can see from the scriptures that if a man were to die between the ages of 30 and 40, he would have left the land of the living in the midst of his days. The word for midst does not require that the Mount of Olives cleave precisely in dead center. The scripture merely indicates that a division will be effected in the middle section of the mountain. May I now direct your attention to figure 31. The two dash black lines labeled X and Y and orientated east and west are normal faults in the upper crust of the earth. As you can see, they pass north and south of Jerusalem on a converging track toward the Mount of Olives. These normal faults are not there by accident. I am persuaded they have been created there by God and, at his command, will collapse to fulfill the prophecy of Zechariah. Please note that fault X intersects the northern flank of the Mount of Olives, while fault Y passes through its southern end. That section of the Mount of Olives between X and Y is the midst of the mountain and is the section that will collapse and sink downward as God commands it. These two normal faults, X and Y, pass through the Mount of Olives and then make contact with a series of north-south normal faults that exist along the eastern lee of the mountain. In this zone where the intersection of east-west and north-south faults occurs, a structural weakness like the A4 depression can be generated in the Earth's crust if violent earthquakes occur. The center of this geological weakness zone is approximately 4,000 cubits or 6,000 feet directly east of the eastern gate of the Old City of Jerusalem on the opposite side of the Mount of Olives. The center of Jerusalem sits atop Cenomanian and Turanian limestone, a rock strata that will safely support the largest structures. One might naturally suppose that just across the narrow Kidron Valley, you would find the Mount of Olives to be composed of a duplicate rock strata. However, its shape betrays its actual geological composition, for it is made of Cenomanian chalk, the same type of chalk that crumbles into 1,000 pieces when it falls from a blackboard railing. I believe that God deliberately formed it out of chalk, for when its northern and southern ends divide from its middle section, then the entire middle section will sink downward and crumble into billions of pieces of chalk. This geological transformational process is shown in parts A and B of figure 32. A and B of figure 32. Such a downward slippage process has been used many times in the past by God to form large fault block valleys around the globe. When the critical force holding the area of a fault together is finally exceeded by the force spreading apart the Red Sea, see figure 25, then the area of a fault will suddenly rip open from the Gulf of Aqaba to Lebanon. The resultant fantastic earthquakes produced in Israel will cause 1. A new triple point depression to be formed with a center about 4,000 cubits east of the eastern gate of the old city. 2. Everything between points X and Y on figure 32 to sink downward and crumble. 3. The remaining northern half of the Mount of Olives, that section north of point X, to move northward on a newly created Gaza plate. 4. The remaining southern half of the Mount of Olives, that section south of point Y, to move southward on the newly created Sinai plate. And 5, the Jericho Valley to rip open southwestward from the Jordan River to the new triple point depression I call Zechariah's Triangle. Figure 32, looking eastward from Jerusalem, illustrates the horizontal sequence of events as they affect the Mount of Olives before and after the cleavage. Figure 33 portrays the overall local area action as if you were viewing it from a point about 3 miles above the ground, 30 miles west of Jerusalem. The spring and river system shown in figure 33 will be discussed later on in these tapes. Figure 34 shows the effect on the entire Holy Land as viewed from the upper atmosphere. Figure 34 shows the effect on the entire Holy Land as viewed from the upper atmosphere. In Isaiah, we have a graphic description of mountains flowing down after God has opened the heavens and made his presence felt over them. Isaiah 64 and 1. Oh, that thou wouldest rend the heavens, that thou wouldest come down, that the mountains might flow down at thy presence. Isaiah cries out for God to open heaven and come down so that the mountains would flow down at his presence. His presence over the Mount of Olives will cause the central block section of the mountain to slide downward into the earth.